Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, we're going to be talking about a spy, a legendary spy. My guest is, well, we're going to call him Fred, since we can't use his actual name, and he's going to be talking about the spy, a man named Dewey Claridge, one of the legendary sort of Cold War era CIA spies, who during the Reagan administration was involved with Iran-Contra, got indicted and convicted and then later pardoned, and truly a great legend of American intelligence. Fred was a friend and colleague of Dewey Claridge's, was at his funeral, and is here to talk about a legendary spy. Fred, since that's what I'm calling you today, Fred, tell me about Dewey Claridge. How did you first meet him?
Oh, good question. You know, I thought about that last night, thinking about this show today, and I honestly do not remember how I met him. Not surprisingly, Dewey is just a man of gave incredible service to his nation. A lot of people tend to overthink that or not look at it. This guy, back in 1955, after graduating from Brown and getting a master's from Columbia University from the Russian Institute, was recruited into the CIA. 33 years of service he gave to our nation. Also in there, prior to actually, you know, becoming an intelligence officer, they sent him into the Army. So he was an infantry officer, where he was a distinguished honor graduate down at the Fort Benning, Georgia. That's part of the look at this incredible American patriot who's provided so much work, effort, sweat, blood, and tears for this nation over the 33-year career he had in the CIA. And then it didn't stop there. When he retired, he continued on working, you know, providing services to the country. One thing I'd like to ask you about, though, you mentioned he was convicted in Iran-Contra. Are you certain about that?
Well, I believe he was convicted and then pardoned by George H.W. Bush.
Hmm.
Well, I'll double check
that, because I thought he was indicted, but there's pardon before a conviction.
Oh, well, that's possible.
Yeah.
God forbid, don't let the facts intrude on this journalist.
True.
I have standards to live down to.
That, there was, in good old Dewey style, when he went to, appeared for the, I believe it was the arraignment when they were indicted, back in November of 91, he showed up with a Russian SAS camouflage field jacket on over his, you know, nice suit. And apparently the special prosecutor, Lawrence Walsh, who's the longest-serving, most expensive special prosecutor in the history of our nation, apparently was outraged when he showed up for it. And a reporter asked Dewey, why are you wearing that? So Dewey responded to the reporter who asked him, why are you wearing a British SAS field jacket? And he says, because when I go to war, I intend to win.
Yes, he was not a shy retiring type, Dewey. Once his name was public and he was out in the field, he did talk to journalists, and let's just say he provided good color.
Oh, yeah. Well, in addition to good color, the guy provided incredible service to his nation. He saved a lot of lives and, you know, thwarted a lot of terrorist acts, as well as other things going back into the Cold War era.
Where did he first serve for the CIA? Was it India?
Oh, he served in India. He served in South America. You know, he was the European Director of Operations, which is a very large job thereafter. He took over and created the first counterterrorism center. And, you know, one of the most known aspects early on of the counterterrorism center that he got up and running, which was a combination of all the CIA assets, Department of Justice, FBI, Department of Treasury, everybody and their brother. It was June 14th, 1985. The TWA flight 847 was hijacked, and Hezbollah killed a U.S. citizen, a U.S. Navy diver, Robert Steedham. And it was just a few years later when the Counterterrorism Center got up and running by Dewey, that Dewey personally got involved and went after one of the main culprits in it, Fozzy Yunus. And he ended up getting Fozzy Yunus and bringing him to justice, where he ended up serving, was sentenced to a 30-year sentence.
And what are some of the other things that I know that you won't know everything that Dewey did, but what are some of the things that you are aware of that he did in his government career before he continued doing stuff privately?
Oh, he did serve in India. He was a guy that was armed with the 1986 Omnibus Crime Act, and he started with the focus on radical Islamic terrorist organizations, and he put a coalition together of CIA officers, all the spies, the guys undercover, technical specialists, and integrated the FBI, the NSA, DIA, and the special operations personnel, the U.S. Special Forces personnel, into it under one umbrella that would go after these people. Prior to that, from 1981 to 84, he served in Washington as a Latin American division chief. So he was responsible for all of that. He was assigned to Nepal back in 57. So he's been all over the place. He's done a lot, and he's had a lot on his plate.
So, you mentioned that when he left government, that he continued to do work, and that's where, without getting into too much detail or as much as you're comfortable with, that's where you and he really worked together. Can you describe as much as possible the work that you did together?
Yeah, sure. Well, some of it was, anytime an American citizen was in harm's way, that got Dewey's attention in a big way. He had this strong, strong belief in protecting Americans, and it didn't matter if he was employed by the government or not. So anytime there were journalists kidnapped or individuals kidnapped, U.S. citizens, or allied citizens of allied nations, Dewey was all in. All you had to do was pick up the phone, and he was Johnny on the spot to pitch in and help out. And his Rolodex is just beyond belief. He could pick up the telephone and call tribal leaders in Afghanistan to help, or he could pick them up and call over in the Middle East and in the middle of the desert in Iraq. He's just phenomenal. And, he took great pride in being an American and being of service to other Americans and other allied citizens of allied nations. He was just, which sometimes is overlooked because they see all the deep, dark secrets of the CIA, that this guy was a true, great American patriot. He believed in his country. He believed in it going the right way. He did not believe in kowtowing to anybody or any nation. That was just good old-school salt-of-the-earth American.
I'm talking about legendary CIA spy Dwayne Dewey Claridge, who died within the last couple of weeks. I'm talking with a man we'll call Fred today, who was a colleague and a longtime friend of Dewey Claridge. He got written about in various places in recent years for running what was described as a sort of private intelligence network. I know you have some feelings on those descriptions. What can you say?
Well, private intelligence network, you probably want to talk to General Mike Flynn, who was responsible for all intel over in the Afghanistan theater. But apparently, based on everything that we've heard and intimately know about, is that General Flynn really appreciated that information. And it was force protection type information, meaning there's two types of intel. There's one that the CIA collect, which nobody else is allowed to collect, and then there's force protection, which the Department of Defense is allowed to collect to protect the U.S. military forces. And that's where Dewey was really engaged, this was a force protection aspect. Sometimes information comes in, and you can't control what comes in, but you pass it up. Apparently, there were some jealousies that took place because some of the information that he was passing on was really accurate, and you know, other organizations felt that that was more in their wheelhouse than it was on force protection. But the bottom line was, in Dewey's minds, there's information there. We need to pass it up because this could save lives. Period. End of discussion.
Describe the funeral. Who was there, as best as you're able to say? Maybe not names, but you know, descriptions, and describe how his ashes were contained.
Well, let's go back a little. In Dewey's final days, you know, this guy had such a talent for recruiting cooperative foreign nationals to help our country that in his final days, we saw people that he recruited some 30 years ago coming over to visit him while he's on his deathbed. That's the level of commitment and loyalty he had to people who helped the United States of America. These people were coming back, traveling from, dozens of them, traveling from international locations just to come in and sit with him for 10 minutes, even though he could barely speak, just to pay their last respects to him and let him know that they cared about him and loved him and appreciated what he had done for them. That's the kind of person he was. You know, once Dewey, you know, gives you his word is solid. Unfortunately, that's less and less nowadays. But with regard to his funeral, every household name you can imagine was there, going back from the 1980s to present day. And it was nice because it was a comfortable atmosphere where nobody was concerned about, you know, talking and being, you know, misquoted or.
You mean there were no people like me there?
Well, no, actually, there were a couple. There were a couple, but they were there to pay their respects, not as professional reporters doing their job. What Dewey had said for his will, he requested that his ashes not be put in a typical urn, but be put in a 75-millimeter artillery shell and placed with a flag of the United States of America. That's his final wishes, and that's what his family did, his sons Tarek and Ian. And, you know, we were there just to pay our respects to a great American patriot who served his nation more than, you know, most human beings can ever do in multiple lifespans.
You know, you mentioned about all the people who came to pay respects that he'd recruited, and I've often found when I'm with you know, someone, you know, who's been a case officer for the CIA, whose job it is to recruit people to, you know, give them information, you know, that the recruiting button never turns off. You know, even if you're just an American journalist who has nothing to offer them, they still wanted to recruit you. Did you feel recruited by Dewey?
No, not at all. Dewey, even to the people, I remember asking him this once, he didn't look at people as he was recruiting them. He looked at them, he would recruit them in a normal fashion that they recruit, which he was such an expert at. But he looked at them as more as colleagues. And I think that's what may have made that bond between him and so many of the people he's recruited over his career, where they want to jump on an airplane and get a visa and fly all the way here just to pay respects to him for 5 minutes. He treated people well. Now, mind you, Dewey's not all roses and flowery personality. You step out of line, Dewey's going to express his opinion to you, and sometimes it's not pleasant. But you respect the person for that, and he's just, you know, what you see is what you get. Recently, there was a journalist, a very, very, very well-known journalist, who was deep into the Middle East and in Afghanistan and was doing research and he had a theory that he had run by me. I said, you know what, I'm not going to give you my opinion on this, but I'll give you somebody that will, and he might be able to shed some light on it to see if you're going down the wrong path. So I put him on the phone with Dewey, and they had a conversation. And afterwards, this journalist, who's a brilliant guy,
and his initials, if I'm not correct, are CS.
Yeah.
Okay. Been a guest of this radio show.
Told me that. Well, you know what? I was completely wrong. I didn't realize this. I didn't realize that. And you know, I was just thoroughly impressed with speaking to this guy and the knowledge that he had off the top of his head.
Yeah. Yeah. So, were there any particular Dewey sayings? Like, did he have a, you know, sayings of any kind?
Oh, one of his favorite and most notorious is "Pull your socks up." You know, anytime things would get rough, or somebody would complain, or you know, somebody was injured or something, and you know, or it was political stuff, which he despised the politics. He would just tell people, "Well, you know, times are tough. Pull your damn socks up."
He was. He must have had some incredible stories.
Oh, incredible stories. You know, you could be talking to him over lunch or something and mention something in a specific country, and he'll say, "Well, hold on, let me check on that." He picks up the phone and calls the former head of that intelligence agency or somebody extremely well-placed and talks to him right there on the spot. "Yeah, how you doing, old friend? Everything's great. I got a question for you, blah, blah, blah." Ask the question, and there's the answer. He's just the international Rolodex.
What will you remember the most, and what will you miss?
Gosh, there's so much to remember and there's so much to miss. That's a difficult question. You know, I miss the daily talks, the 3-minute conversations, and the hour long conversations with them. And you could just sit and listen. It was a benefit to listen to them because it's like a talking encyclopedia, or an extremely well versed professor in a given subject talking to you. And all you have to do is sit back and listen. He's just full of knowledge.
Well, Fred, thank you for talking about Dewayne Dewey Claridge. A legend has passed on. Thank you.
You're welcome.